and man was made finite, and his capacity for exercising any and all his qualities is limited beyond which he cannot possibly go. His intellect is bound by limits as determined as the law of God which controls it, and also, his capacity for loving and for the enjoyment of his happiness, and though he may live for all eternity either as man or spirit, he cannot possibly extend or pass beyond the boundary lines of his creation. He cannot enter into the realm of the divine where limitations do not exist, and capacity for receiving knowledge and wisdom and love, and for progression that is commensurate with the very fountainhead of God, himself. Then, such being the nature and limitation and capacity of man, it is apparent that he can never by virtue of his creation and the qualities which he possess, become a partaker of the nature and essence of God, unless he receives something in addition to these qualities, and he must receive this something from without. It will not do to say, that there is within him, as an inherent part of him, that, which when developed, will make him of a nature divine and a part of the essence of the Father, for this is not true. There is nothing in man of this nature, and it is impossible to produce an essence divine unless there be something from which it can be produced, that in some degree has the nature of that essence. It would be the equivalent of producing something from nothing which even God does not attempt to do. Then, as man is thus limited, all that flows from the qualities and attributes which he possesses is necessarily limited. The enjoyment of his intellect, the pleasures of his love, the satisfaction of his reasoning powers, and as a sum total, his capacity for happiness have their bounds, and, besides, the consciousness of immortality can never be his, either as spirit or mortal, even though he may strive for it to be. When man takes on the divine nature and becomes absorbed in the essence of the Father, he 404, then becomes like the Father, and whatever his image to the Father may have been when he was mere man, now he becomes the real substance, and limitations of possibilities become removed. Love sees no ending and intellectual development, no boundaries, happiness no limitations, and immortality becomes a thing of knowledge, and the soul a new creature, having the divine essence of the Father, and until this new creation has taken place, and the transformation becomes a thing of reality, and the soul be made at one with the Father, man cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven. Then, no longer man but now an angel. Now, as I have written you before, all this can be accomplished only by the operation of the new birth, that is the inflowing into the soul of man of the divine love of the Father. This love contains the essence of God's divinity, and when man obtains it he is then of the same essence as the Father, and for the first time becomes a part of the divine, and fitted to inhabit the celestial heavens. In no other way can man partake of this nature, and it does not require much reasoning to show the logical truth of this statement, for man in his earthly affairs, and in his material experiments in producing compounds from elements, applies the same principle that I assert in my statement, the dough cannot be leavened unless leaven is placed in the batch. So you see that without this divine love entering into the soul it will be impossible for the natural man to become the divine angel. Beliefs and creeds and doctrines and sacrifices cannot work this transformation, and even though the beliefs may be without doubt, and the creeds and doctrines satisfactory, and the sacrifices without end, yet they will all be futile to change the soul of the mere man into the soul of the divine angel, and all this, in part, is why man should seek to obtain the divine love and become an inhabitant of the celestial spheres. I have written enough for tonight and I am pleased at the way in which you received it. So with all my love and blessings, I'm your brother and friend, Jesus. I am here, Edwin Forrest. Well, I am here again and I am glad to be able to write you for I need your advice so much, as several have told me that you can help me. I am in much darkness and suffering, and don't know just why. But I suppose it is because of my evil habits, and I want to get relief if possible, so try your best to help me. The Paget Messages 1916. Well, I understand what you say and will believe that you desire to help me, and I will certainly try to take your advice. So give it to me. Yes, I see some who are like myself and need help as I do. Yes, now I see some beautiful and bright ones who are so different from what I have ever seen, and as I look they become plainer to me, and I see your wife and she is so beautiful and speaks to me, and says that she heard what I said to you and that she is ready and willing to help me, if I will listen to her and try to believe what she says. My, she is lovely and seems too good. Well, I have heard what you say and you surprise me somewhat in telling me about Taggart and the others, and I will try to do as you say. But before I go, tell me, how did you ever get the power to receive my writing and thus communicate? I never knew when on earth that you had this power, and if you had told me, I suppose I would not have believed. So Ned, I will do as you say, and your wife calls me to her and I am going. So goodbye, and believe that I am thankful. Your old partner and now grateful friend, Edwin Forrest. June 29, 1916. I am here, Luther. I desire to write a short message tonight on the subject of the observance of the ceremonies which my church still uses in its worship is not approved by God or Jesus. I will not detain you very long and will try to express myself as succinctly as possible. Well, as you may not know, the church of which I am the founder believes and teaches the necessity of infant baptism and the observance of the Lord's Supper as necessary parts of its church doctrine, and of such very great importance that without them it is difficult to become an accepted member of the invisible Church of Christ. Nothing is further from the truth than these doctrines for the baptism of infants. They have no virtue to save one from his sins or to make him in atonement with the Father, and the mere fact that water is sprinkled on an infant's head and some blessing pronounced by the preacher does not in any way bring that infant in unison with the Father. Baptism is of man's creation, and to God it means nothing more than an outward ceremony that affects the infant merely as regards its connection with the established earthly church. It is not possible for this baptism to have any effect upon the soul of the infant, and neither does it 405, open up the soul faculties to the inflowing of the divine love. God cares not for these ceremonies, and rather looks upon them with disapproval, for their tendency is to make men and women neglectful of the great truth that will bring them in harmony with God's laws of love and redemption. And the same thing may be said of any and all kinds of baptism, whether the subject thereof be an infant or a grown man or woman. As to the sacrament of the Lord's Supper, it has no part in God's plan for the redemption of mankind, and it is merely a reminder of the association of Jesus with his disciples. It cannot affect the condition or development of the soul, and as now understood and practiced, this sacrament is of no importance, for Jesus does not want to be remembered in the way of recalling to him the tragedy on the cross, which was only the result of the malice and envy of the Jews, and the blood spilt is not an element that enters into the plan of the salvation of men. And besides, with this sacrament there is always more or less worshipping of Jesus as God, which he, Jesus, abhors and looks upon as blasphemy. So you see, the celebration of the Last Supper is a thing which is not acceptable to God or to Jesus. He does not want men to believe that they can be saved by any sacrifice of him or by any blood which he may have shed as a result of his crucifixion. Of course, you will remember that the question of what the wine and bread of the sacrament really were was one that engendered much controversy, and even hatred and ill-feeling on the part of those who were assisting me in the Great Reformation. If I had known then what I do now, no such question would have been debated or believed in by me and taught for many years. The blood of Jesus was no more than any other man's blood, and the commemoration of the Last Supper that Jesus gave his disciples before his death is a useless ceremony and brings no help to those who indulge in this sacrament. I see that you are tired and sleepy, and I will not write more now. So with my love and wishes for an increase in you of the divine love, I'm your brother in Christ, Martin Luther. July 2, 1916. I am here, John. I come tonight to tell you of a truth which is important for you to know as well as for the world of mankind. I will not write a very, the Paget Messages 1916, long message, but what I may say will be the truth, and every man should understand it and make it his own. I will not write upon any subject that you have been instructed upon before, but will deal with a subject entirely new, and my subject is, why should men learn that they are not to be left to themselves in their conceptions of what life means, and what its importance is in the economy of man's creation and destiny? I know that this may seem to you to be a strange subject to write on, but it is one that should be of interest to all men who know that the earth life is very short and then eternity takes them into its embrace and never again permits them to become creatures of time. Man lives and dies and never lives again according to the materialist, and he is as the brute animal without any future. But the spiritualist, and by that I mean those who believe that there is something more to man than the mere material, believes he lives and never ceases to live, although the physical body dies never to be resurrected again as such body. Now, as we take either the one or the other of these views, the meaning of man's earth life assumes a very different aspect, and calls for very different thoughts and actions on his part in living his life. Of course, if what is called death is the end of things, that man should do, or he should think he should do, as the old saying, eat, drink and be merry for tomorrow you shall die, and with that death comes oblivion and forgetfulness never to be awakened again into consciousness. His mission in the universe is fulfilled, and he can no more experience the hopes or ambitions or joys or sorrows which were his as a living man. But on the other hand, if man never ceases to live, then his thoughts and conduct should be turned towards the accomplishment of that which will provide for him the best possible future. Those of both opinions know, that when death comes the physical body can no longer be used, and those who believe in the continuous existence know that as the physical body perishes man must have some other form or body in which may be lodged the consciousness of this continued existence, and that body must be as real as the one which he relinquishes. Such being the fact, the man who knows that death does not end all will naturally and necessarily seek to learn what that body of continued existence is like, and what is necessary to enable him to obtain that body and thereby enjoy the living in eternity. And thus seeking he will not be satisfied to learn that 406, body is the mere spirit body which has been his during all the years of his earth life, but will desire to further learn what the relationship is between that body and the manner of living his earth life. I know that of himself man cannot to any degree discover this relationship, and that he must depend upon the teachings and experiences of those who have experienced the separation of the spirit from the physical in order to at all comprehend this relationship. As one having had this experience, I wish to say that the spirit body is, of itself, a creation like as is the physical body, and has its existence only for the purpose of preserving man's individuality, and of containing and sheltering his soul, both while on earth and after he becomes a spirit. Then his living means that he is placed on the earth merely to acquire an individuality, and to learn that within him is the soul which is his real self and which he must cherish and educate and feed with the higher thoughts and goodness of his original creation, and not neglect the opportunities that come to him for this development. I know that this seems incoherent to you with no special object in view, but you are mistaken in thus thinking, for the object will soon be seen. But as you are not just in condition for further writing tonight, I will postpone my writing until later. So trusting that you will not feel inclined to reject the message, I will say good night. Your brother in Christ, John. July 3, 1916. I am here, Mary. I want very much to write, as I have been waiting for some time to send my dear Leslie Stone a communication, and I have been so disappointed because it seemed to me that conditions would never present themselves that would enable me to tell of my love and desires. But now that I am writing again, I hope that you will not think me selfish if I should write a little longer than seems to be reasonable. Well, I was present the other night when you came to us in your spirit form, and what Helen told you is all true, but she did not tell you the whole truth, for if she had, she would have told you that I greeted you also, and that you said I was very beautiful, and that Leslie had no conception of what a lovely sweetheart he had, and that if he could only see me and be with me he would never want to return to earth again. And I told you to tell him that I was his, and no one else's, and that I was the Paget Messages 1916, waiting for him to come, and that I was going to try to bring him to these spheres of love just as Helen did you, and I am going to do it, too. Of course, I have never had any experience of this kind, but Helen says that she will show me the way, and that very soon. And now I desire to tell him that he must not be surprised if some night before very long he finds himself with me and enjoying my love and happiness. But Helen says that if he does come, she will meet him also and tell him some things that will cause him to think that I do not love him so much, but I don't care if she does, so that I have him with me. He must believe in what I hear, right, for it is true, and we will have all the enjoyment that I can possibly promise, and I know that then I will be so real to him that he will never thereafter have to wonder what kind of looking girl his soulmate is. He may not recollect any more than you do his experience, but yet there will remain with him in his memory some conception of what his Mary looks like, so that you will be real to him as your Helen is to you. Oh, what a glorious thought that I can have him with me in his actual spirit presence, and talk to him and have him talk to me. Won't that be heaven for us both? But I must not get into such rhapsody, for if I do I may forget some other things that I desire to say. Tell him that I am with him so very much, and that when he thinks I am giving him the signal I am really doing so, and that when he does not receive the signal I am frequently with him. And tell him, too, that as I progress in my soul development and get more of the divine love in my soul, the more I love him, and try to make him realize it, and that now as I am in the celestial heavens, I know that he will not be left in the lower spheres, for I could not be perfectly happy without him, and that God is too good to deprive me of his companionship. What a wonderful thing is love, and I mean not only the love of the Father, but the lesser love of the soulmate when it knows that its soulmate on earth returns that love. But of course, the mortal soulmate can never love as does the soulmate in the higher spheres. I am so very happy tonight that I could write for a long time yet, but I must not, though I will add a postscript. I am with his mother very much, and love her very dearly, because she loves her son so much, and we often talk about the time when he will come to us and be one of the family of redeemed spirits, and when his home and my home shall be 407, the same. His mother is a very beautiful spirit and knows only love, and while she loves all her children on earth, yet she feels closer to him because he gives her the opportunity to come to him and he responds to her thoughts of love and happiness. His father is also much interested and is with him very much, trying to help him and turn his thoughts to the higher things of life on earth as well as here, and is now here telling me that I must let him know that he, the father, is so very happy that his son's longings and aspirations are so often given to those thoughts that will enable him to progress to the delights that come only with the divine love of the Father. Well, I must stop now, or you will think that I am very selfish, and I do not want you to think that, for you know I love you as a sister and want you to believe that I am a good little spirit, even if I do love more than some spirits who don't know so much about love. So I will say good night, but tell my dear one to prepare to have his spirit carried away some night to fields of bliss and beauty that very few mortals visit. So goodbye. Your own true friend and sister, Mary Kennedy. I am here, your own true and loving Helen. You have received quite a letter from Mary tonight, and she was so glad that she could write you, for she wanted to let the doctor, Leslie Stone, know that she intends to carry his spirit with her and enjoy his presence as I did yours. I will assist her and she will succeed, and the doctor will be carried to the sphere to which his soul development will enable him to enter, which I think will be the third, for he has much development and is in possession of much of the love. Well, I see that you do not feel like writing much tonight, and I will not try to write longer, and only say that I love you with all my heart and soul. So love me and give me my kiss. Good night, your own true loving, Helen. July 9, 1916. I am here, Jesus. I come today to tell you that I am pleased with you in your efforts to find the truth of what we have taught as to God and of the relation of man to him. I have been with you in your reading of several days past, and have observed the effect upon you of the contrast between the beliefs and teachings of men as you have read them and the teachings of the Paget Messages 1916, truth that we have revealed to you in our messages. While these writings that you have been reading have in them some things of truth, yet there are many things that are wholly untrue, and the mere results of speculation. Today, if you feel in condition, I will instruct you as to some of the errors and deficiencies of Christian science, and the want of the true comprehension of its founder of the realities of being. She writes and teaches that there is nothing real in sin and error and disease, and that their apparent existence is wholly due to the mortal mind, and that when this mind denies the existence of these things, they will no longer exist. Well, in this assertion there is a large grain of truth, but in order to understand and apply this truth, more than a mere denial of their existence must be taught and believed by man. It is true that God never created anything of evil, that which is not in harmony with his nature and essence, which are only good, and that to ascribe the existence of these evils and discords to God is erroneous and blasphemous. But the fact remains that these things exist, and the mere denial of their existence does not remedy the harmful results that flow from such existence. Man suffers from evil and error and disease and has always so suffered since the fall from his state of perfection, and always will suffer in consequence of there being in his consciousness these things of reality, and the mere calling them the result of mortal mind will not explain their existence or furnish a remedy by which they may be gotten rid of. First arises the necessity of understanding how and by what means these things came into existence, and then it will become easier for the understanding of the means and the way by which they may be eliminated from the life and apparent nature of mankind. As I have already told you, these things, foreign to God's creation, were created by man alone in the excessive and unlawful exercise of his willpower in following out the suggestions and desires of his animal appetites, which unduly asserted themselves when man lost a part of his spirituality by his disobedience. Their creation was the result of something more than what the founder of that science calls the mortal mind, for the mind is only a part of man's being, and while the faculties of the mind must be used in the operation of all the powers and qualities of man, yet the mind is not the originator of all his desires and appetites and emotions. The 408, emotional nature and affections are distinct from the mere mind, or the intellectual faculties, and as regards sin and error, are generally the creators of the same, although the mind may and does foster and increase these things so created. Then man must understand that these excrescences to his perfect creation are real and existing, and result in his own damnation and alienation from the good, and are antagonistic to his original and natural condition of perfection, and that they cannot be swept out of existence by the mere assertion that they are not real. Again, man must understand that they are the creatures primarily of the inordinate exercise of the animal appetites and desires, and not of the exercise of the mind, and that they are to be eradicated by the same process in reverse order as was used in their creation. Of course, it must not be lost sight of that in using this process that the faculties of the mind must be brought into operation, just as they were in the creation of these existences. And the great fact to be remembered in this process is that these things are real, and not things of the mere imagination, which is the equivalent of the founder's mortal mind. Now, when man grasps the meaning, as thus explained, of what these things really are, and how they came into being, then he will the more readily comprehend the way or the means by which they are to be destroyed and never again permitted to become a part of his being. For while they do not by nature belong to his being, yet by reason of his being the creator of them, they are, so far as his consciousness is concerned, together with all the results flowing therefrom, a part of his being, and that part which keeps him in discord with the laws controlling his own existence. The purity of his true being is always besmirched by the impurities of his own artificial being, and always will be, until he eliminates these impurities which, as to him and to his fellow man, are real, persistent existences. The will, however, is the great force that must be used in the destruction of these excrescences, and as this will power in man is free and untrammeled, and in its operations follows the suggestions and desires of the appetites, both animal and spiritual, of man, it therefore becomes apparent that these appetites and desires must first be controlled and directed in that direction that will cause the will to be exercised in such a manner as to lead the thoughts and deeds towards the realization of the desires and appetites in harmony with God's laws. The Paget Messages 1916, as sin and evil are not the creatures of the spiritual desires, but wholly of the animal, then to eradicate from man's being these things of evil and sin, the efforts of man must be directed towards the supplanting of the unlawful and inharmonious animal desires and appetites, by appetites and desires arising from the same source that is in harmony with the laws creating this very source. Man was created by God with animal appetites just as he was created with spiritual aspirations, and the one is just as harmonious with the laws of his creation as the other, and the loss of the spiritual aspiration, or the perversion of the animal appetites, similarly causes man to become out of harmony with these laws. So that man, in order to become free from these foreign parts of his being, must strive, not by a denial of their reality, but by the effort to supplant them, to recreate, as it were, in himself the animal appetites that are consistent and in harmony with those which were his when he was made the perfect man, in other words, to destroy the beings of his own creation, and possess only those of the creation of God. Of course, in this effort, he will have to use his mind, mortal or otherwise, but in addition, he will also have to exercise the faculties of his emotional and affectional nature, which are not of the mind but the soul. Mere negation or belief will not be sufficient, but desires and cravings for these things which engender sin must be supplanted by desires and craving for those things which are in harmony with his creation. So, I repeat, the teachings that sin and error and disease are not real and are no part of man's being, as he now exists and lives, is erroneous and, when not understood, harmful, and not sufficient to bring about the regeneration of man. In one sense it is true that sin and error and disease are not real, but that means that so far as God's creation of man is concerned they have no existence, for he created only that which was good and in harmony with his perfect laws. But as man is a creator as well as a creature, and as these things are the creatures of man alone, then so far as the being of man is involved, they have a reality which will persist until their creator man has destroyed them. I am pleased that you gave me the opportunity to write today, and am also glad to find you in good condition. Your friend and brother, Jesus. July 19, 1916. I am here, Edwin Forrest. I come tonight to tell you that I am much better than I was when last I wrote you, and have gotten out of much of the darkness in which I was. This is also wonderful to me that I scarcely realize what it means. And when I think of how ignorant I was on earth and what a godless life I led, I never cease thanking God for the great opportunities that I enjoy, and for the help of the beautiful, loving spirits who came to me to show me the way to truth and this love of the Father. Your wife has been my angel of hope in all my darkness, and her tenderness and love have caused me to awaken from the miserable condition in which I found myself shortly after coming to the spirit world. How fortunate I am I cannot tell you, and never will I be able to tell anyone, for no spirit that has not experienced what I have can possibly convey the meaning of the great change from darkness and ignorance to some light and some of the divine love that has come to me. I now pray to the Father almost continually, and as I do so, I realize that there comes into my soul that which changes all its qualities, and makes me realize how dead I was. Oh! If I only had known of this wonderful love on earth, how different my life would have been, and how many heartaches would have been saved to others, and among them I include yourself, for now I realize that I did you great wrong in our business affairs by my conduct and drunken escapades. But I know that you have forgiven me, and pray for me and want me to be happy, and your wife, who knows what happened, tells me not to think of these things but to think only of the Father's love, and the fact that it can be mine in ever-increasing abundance. I wanted to write this to you, and I now feel better, and you may rest assured that so far as I can in this spirit world help you and retrieve what injury I did you, I will do to the utmost of my power. Well, I have written considerable tonight and must stop. So continue to pray for me, and I know that I shall be helped. Good night, Edwin Forrest. July 25, 1916. I am here, Luke. I merely come to corroborate what Luther has written, as I am one of those who have set the causes in operation. You may believe what is said, and your realization will not be long postponed. I did not write the Gospel or the Acts, as they are now contained in the Bible. I wrote a Gospel and also a book called the Acts, but my 409, the Paget Messages 1916, writings were not preserved, and in the copying and translating of them many things were eliminated and many things added. Of course, I cannot tell you now what these are things are, but before our messages are finished you will know of many truths which will explain this matter. I am really the Luke who wrote the Gospel and the Acts, which were the supposed originals of what the Bible now contains. So with my love and blessings I will say, good night. Your brother in Christ, Luke.